The moment the Jewish people have been waiting for so many years has finally arrived. In Parshas Yisro, the Jews crowd around Har Sinai and receive the Aseres Hadibros. Most of the Ten Commandments are fundamental laws which make sense for being part of this austere list. And then we get to the last one, Lo Sachmod Beis Reacha, Lo Sachmod Eishes Reacha, V'Avdo V'Amaso V'Shoro V'Chamaro, V'Chol Asher L'Reacha. Don't covet your friend's house, don't covet your friend's wife, his servant, his maidservant, his ox, his donkey, and all else that your friend has. If you look more closely at the Pasuk, you'll notice that the Torah lists all different types of possessions one might desire. A house, a woman, slaves, animals. Basically, it's already covered all the major assets from that time period that one might have been jealous of. So what does the Pasuk add by seemingly unnecessarily repeating at the end, V'chol asher l'reecha, in all that which your friend has? And if it was just coming to be a stopgap to cover all possibilities, why not just say that without listing all the above items? Once again this week, I'd like to turn to something from Dan Ariely's book, Predictably Irrational. Dan performed the following experiment, which I'll refer to as the closing door study. He had a computer program with three doors, red, blue, and green, and behind each door was the opportunity to earn money per click, anywhere from 1 cent to 10 cents, with a total of 100 clicks in the game. Opening the door also used up one click. The goal is to find the room with the largest payoff and click away as many times as you can. For example, one student clicked first on the red door and received 3.5 cents, then 4 cents, and then down to 1 cent. He decided to switch to the green door, and then clicks received 3.7 cents, 5.8 cents, and 6.5 cents the third time. His earnings were starting to grow more significantly in this room. But wait, what about the blue room? Maybe I'll do better there, he thought. He switched and in three clicks earned about 4 cents a click. He quickly realized the green door, earning about 5 cents a click, was best and went back. What they found in this first part of the experiment is that most people, quote, when given a simple setup and a clear goal, in this case to make money, are quite adept at pursuing the source of their satisfaction. But now they added a wrinkle to the game for part two of the experiment. Any door left unclicked for 12 clicks would disappear. What ended up happening is the participant would click in one room several times and see a different door start to disappear. So he'd switch to click in that room several times. But now the third room was about to disappear. Again, he would switch to this third door and cyclically click several times in each room, always making sure the other doors never fully disappeared. In their frenzy to keep the doors open, participants earned 15% less than those who didn't deal with the closing doors in the first part of the experiment. And the truth is, said Dan, they would have made even more money by picking any one of those three doors and just sticking with it rather than jumping from room to room. Dan even added further caveats to the experiment, like a 3 cent fee to open up a door, which the participants still continued the same irrational desire. They wanted to keep their options open at all costs. While Dan doesn't address this directly, I think the root of this behavior is what I would call the grass is always greener on the other side syndrome. The participants weren't content with the door they had chosen, even when it was going well and they were successfully achieving their goal, which in this case was to earn the most money. Yet, they still thought in the back of their minds, what if? Maybe I'd be happier and more successful if I only moved to the other room. Yes, the enticement of the other room might be fool's gold, but still. And that was their downfall. Rabbi Yisachar Franz says, you know why the Torah wasn't satisfied merely listing various possessions which one shouldn't covet, rather needing to generally repeat V'chol asher l'reecha? Because the Torah was teaching us the lesson of Dan Ariely's doors. You think you'd be happier if you had the mansion your friend lives in? Well, maybe you don't realize the pain that he and his wife suffer, living in the huge house alone without any children. You wish you'd married your friend's gorgeous wife? Maybe you can't see the mental illness, or even, God forbid, physical illness that she's carrying, which is straining their marriage. You dream of the Porsche Ferrari that your bachelor neighbor drives instead of your 200,000-mile beat-up Toyota Corolla? Perhaps he came into the windfall after his parents died suddenly in a car accident, and he'd give anything to have them back instead of the car. You want all of your neighbor's things? You think the grass will be greener on the other side? V'chol asher l'reyecha. It's a package deal. You want the house? You get everything your friend has too, including the tzaris that comes with it. In Parshas Nitzavim, the Torah says, Re'ei nasati lefanecha hayom es hachayim ve'es hatov ve'es hamavis ve'es hara. And then a few psukim later continues, Uvacharta b'chayim. See, I have placed before you life and the good, and death and bad, and you should choose life. Doesn't it seem strange that Hashem feels a need to reiterate that we should choose life? I think most people would want to live, don't you? It's obvious. It's a non-decision. So why the need to choose life? Perhaps Hashem is stressing not to choose life, but rather you should make decisions within your life. Of course one shouldn't rush into something, but once that informed decision is made, stick with it. Don't leave open the doors of doubt, the what-ifs of life. If only I had married this person, if only I had bought that house, if only I had taken that job, then my life would be better. Instead, if you choose a life for yourself worth living, then you'll see that all that you have, both the good and those things which are perceived as bad, is really es hatov, that's really all good. And the doors that you didn't open, the options that you passed on, although they may have emitted a brilliant radiance, for you, they in fact would have been es hamavis ves hara. They would have been a bad choice, a mirage, and literally would have destroyed you. Or perhaps the reason your neighbor's grass is greener is because really it's dead. Why? Because they opted for the synthetic grass. We can go through life running from door to door, always looking over our shoulder or our neighbor's fence, wondering what could have been. Or, uvacharta b'chaim, we can choose our life with the full belief that everything we have in that life comes from Hashem, both the good and the perceived bad. If our grass isn't growing or lacks a healthy green color, then we can water it more. No need to move on to another garden. We may not have the fancy mansion or the slickest car, but we have everything that he thinks we need. And then, as the rabbis say, we'll be Ezehu Ashir Hasameach Bechelko, who is wealthy, the one who's happy and content with all that he has and with his lot in life. Shabbat Shalom.